At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Stopping by and welcome to My Shit Therapist with me, Michelle Thomas. Hiya! Every week I ask my guest what's the best and worst thing a therapist has ever said to you. And if you've just heard that and thought, whoa, do I have a story for you, then I need to hear it, please, and thank you. You can email me at myshittherapist@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter at myshittherapist. Do get in touch and share your shit therapist stories and your good ones as well. Love to hear those. So earlier this year, just after the apocalypse started, I reread The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. It's a 12-week course in developing creative habits and setting creative goals. I thoroughly recommend it to anyone. I think you learn so much about yourself over about 3 months. You don't have to be a particularly creative person to benefit from that, I don't think. And in one of the exercises, Julia Cameron outlines the 6 things that she says you need for a balanced life. So the 6 things are work, friendships, exercise, adventure or romance, play, and spirituality. And of all those things, spirituality is the thing that I get stuck on. I've really struggled with, because it's not something that I grew up with. The only spiritual practice I have the slightest glimmer of interest in is witchcraft and spell work. I love the ritual. I've been reading tarot cards since I was about 15, and personally, I don't think there's anything magical or mystical about them. I think they're a really valuable tool for applying different lenses and different perspectives onto a range of issues, and to help you clarify and set your intentions. For me, I think they help you get out of your own way, and they tell you what you already know. That's what I think, and that's how I use them. And because I work in mental health, I started thinking about the relationship between spirituality and spiritual practice and mental health. And in this episode, I do just that with my guest. Marcella Kroll is an LA-based artist, intuitive, and metaphysical teacher. She also describes herself as a guide, an oracle, and a medium. Marcella started reading tarot cards at 18 when she was in rehab, and she describes it as an invaluable tool for her recovery. In this episode, we talk about her being diagnosed as autistic in her early 40s, her experience with homelessness and drug and alcohol abuse, the cost of framing community as a commodity through social media, empathy, sobriety, masking, and the importance of always staying vigilant against what's the point thinking. I really love doing this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you love this episode. All right, let's do it. You're a tarot reader and a metaphysical teacher. And I was just wondering, okay, whether you could outline what that means and what your students might experience, how they might experience that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I've been working on rewriting my bio because I feel like what I do is more than a tarot reading anyway. I use tarot cards as a tool, but combining the fact that I teach classes. I teach about, well, it's not just broad esoteric, but practical magic tools. So that's why I say metaphysical teacher, or because I hold workshops and meditations, but also I'm starting to call it more like guideship, you know, because through guideship, I can offer like intuitive interpretations or hits on things, but also provide tools. And I also teach, though I do teach tarot for teens with the Los Angeles Public Library. So that's also part of my metaphysical teaching, is teaching the teens how to work with divination tools.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's kind of a broad spectrum.
And how long have you been a practicing intuitive?
Well, I mean, professionally as my only job, you know, it's been since 2009. I've been 95. I was 18. So 95, I started, you know, diving into, I was reading tarot. I was learning about astrology. And I mean, a lot of it now, it was not cool back then. Like when I was doing it, if I'm being quite honest, like I was in rehab and I couldn't be partying with my friends anymore. So I needed to learn how to occupy my time. And I had always been drawn to magical or mystery things, you know, which it's just interesting because only 2 years ago I found my biological father, and it turns out like his mother, my grandmother, actually reads tarot, and she read tarot at Woodstock, but I didn't grow up with it. So I feel like it was, you know, I was drawn to it regardless of, you know, my own interests, I think genetically even, you know, being drawn to it. So
that's really interesting. So would you say that that practice was one of your tools for recovery when you were in rehab?
Oh yeah. I mean, majorly. I mean, the first thing that, you know, was why am I like this, you know? And I overdosed at 18 and I went to rehab. I went to treatment, which I can't, you know, I'm very fortunate. Not everybody can go to treatment. I just happened to like fly in under the radar of my adopted dad's healthcare. They like it under some protocol, they were able to cover it. And through that, I was like, you know what? I really want to know why I am the way I am, because nothing felt like it related, you know, like people like, oh, you have anxiety, you have this. And like, none of that really solved the problem of what I was feeling. And when I overdosed, it was like everything that had shut down, you know, to live psychically came back on, and like all the lights were on. So, you know, just out of curiosity and wanting to figure things out, I dove into learning about astrology and my chart, and that led to, you know, diving more into cards. But it was so private for me. It was so personal. It was not something I did for people. Friends of mine would harass me to do readings for them. I did not like it. I did not want to do that. I never saw that this was going to be my work ever. I was like, I'm going to be dead by 20. I will be an artist. Like, this is not, you know, like it never occurred to me that even into 5 years of doing this work, you know, even, by what was it? 2012. I was like, what am I doing? Like I have to say, it wasn't even until 2014 that I accepted that this was my work. Even though I was doing it, it was still like, yeah, I'll do so. I'm going to probably do something else. This was not the path that I wanted. So it cracks me up when I see that people pursue this. And they're like, oh yeah, I want to be like a witchy, magical person. I'm like, good luck. Do you?
Well, the question that I wanted to ask was and you've already started to answer it, is how does that spiritual practice impact your mental health? And another side to that question is how does it impact your career, and how has your career as a spiritual practitioner impacted your mental health? What's the interplay there?
Well, I think, there's so many variables there. you know, when it comes to mental health. You know, when I was younger, I, you know, was severely depressed and not knowing that it was because I was, you know, one, masking, two, like masking how I was feeling, but also two, I did not understand what being highly empathic was. Nobody told me about that. So I internalized a lot, especially as a kid, and just assumed like, well, I must be insane. You know, mental illness does run in my mom's family. Mm-hmm. And so the assumption was, okay, well, maybe I'm just schizophrenic, you know. But honestly, you know, the more I come to, you know, certain things, you know, I got sober 4 years ago. Mm. That was like another level of experience in shifting my spiritual work, because I was having a spiritual crisis and doing spiritual work. And a lot of it was because it weighs on you when you're a super empathic person. You're just constantly having to figure out how to filter out everything that you're feeling and dissect what is yours and what's not yours. Mm. So it's been quite a trial and error kind of way of living to see what works. Now, I have to say, for me personally, and this is not everyone's take on it, I had to get sober to have decent mental health and do this work, because being so wide open and just filtering in so much information between my clients and I, like, it was not good for my mental health. I was up and down and depressive, and I already, like, I don't need help to feel like myself go to a deep, dark place, you know, like I don't need help. I can go there on my own. I don't need, you know, assistance. So, yeah. But the other thing I have to say that I also found out in sobriety that's also helped my spiritual practice, oddly enough, was I was diagnosed last year as a high functioning autistic. I just say I'm autistic, mm-hmm. On the spectrum. And I also feel like that has definitely helped me understand the way my brain works. Mm. The spiritual practice for me is not, it's not something I just put on and go to work and then I come home and take off. Like, this is my life, and I have to live it in the way that I talk about it. Mm. You know, like, some people can have the luxury of like, okay, I'm going to do a little new moon ritual, and then they never think about a spiritual practice. But, you know, my every day is sometimes, you know, every day I get up, I make offerings at my altar. I go outside, I make offerings, you know, I have to implement and weave it in. So I do stay mentally balanced and grounded and not, overstimulated, you know. And, it's interesting too, because of COVID and quarantine and all of these things, I have found that it's kind of forced me, but like, I didn't realize how much I was masking until not having to for months. And then all of a sudden we're starting to kind of go back out into the world a little bit. And I'm like, oh, like I can't do those same walls that I did before. And I can't hide or neutralize or dim down what my practices are to make other people comfortable in the same way. So I don't know if that answers, you know, part of it, but I think the mental, you know, the mental health component is definitely, you know, actually, you know, when I got the history of my grandmother, who is still living, by the way, my dad's mother, mm-hmm. you know, when it comes to how people are persecuted about like psychic work and then also mental health is, you know, she was born in a mental institution, like, because her mother, like my great grandfather had her committed for being insane, but she was really a seer. So it runs in the family. And then, so my grandmother was they had like a woman's kind of like housing units, like for the mental institution during that time. And, you know, so women who were pregnant or having children could live there, you know, so that's where my grandmother was born. So I think the ties between, you know, are you like open and just not treated like with the same kind of care we would give, you know, neurotypical people, or, you know, are they psychic? You know, I think there are a lot of people that are misdiagnosed as schizophrenic or you know, they're more shamanistic, or they're more, I think it's just the dials turned way up.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
I had to tell you, I think it was either on an episode of your podcast, which is Saved by the Spell, or it was on one of your Instagram posts recently when you said that, you know, a spiritual practice doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. And I remember you saying that when you were homeless at different points, and even living in your car, you would just light a tea light.
Yeah.
And that was something that grounded you and gave you a sense of purpose, almost, of giving you, almost literally giving you something to do every day. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it was, well, it's also just to let people know, because not everyone has the luxury or the privilege to have sacred space. I was just talking to a client of mine yesterday who, you know, she has different people that she can stay with, but she doesn't have her own home. And sometimes people think that if you don't have something, that you are not allowed to tune into the things that make you feel connected either to a higher power or to your own grounding and purpose in the world. And I think, you know, for me, I was fortunate enough to have a car during those times, right? And there are some people that don't. And when I didn't feel comfortable, you know, praying in my car, I would go to the park and I'd find there was like a tree that I would be like, okay, this is my sacred space. You know, and I like to tell people, like, there's a lot out there that tells you like, oh, you need this, you have to have an altar, you have to do this. And you don't have to have things to be connected to your spirituality, to your magic, to even to your own person. Right? Like, you don't have to have clothes to be connected to your heart or to your brain, but we have them, you know, like it's really about your intention, behind it, you know? So yeah, I mean, I would either light a little tea light or sometimes put like a little pinch of tobacco on the dashboard, you know, as like an offering, you know. It's I think it's important to work with what works for you. You know, and of course, if you want those things that help you like create space, and you're not like, one, you're not like putting yourself out or like thinking it needs to look a certain way. But like, do the things that feel good for you, you know, and most people have a sense of that, you know. It's the same thing with like, I've had a lot of like, people will ask me things like, about like with my sessions and stuff. They're like, well, you're expensive. And I'm like, well, you know, a lot of times when I've wanted something and I've really wanted it, I've saved for it and I actually appreciated it more, you know, or don't come to see me and go see someone who you can't afford, you know, but don't try to like minimize, you know, what other people are doing based on, you know, to come to your level, like you go to theirs or, you know, or you figure something else out, you know, and you don't have to be ashamed of either of it.
But what would support for a person who experiences the world in a different way? What would that support look like?
Yeah, I mean, well, we have to look at community and community care. You know, a lot of people don't want to take the responsibility or the care of each other. You know, there used to be, I mean, if you look at First Nations people from the Americas and First Nations, Indigenous people in different areas, you know, before colonization, there was a lot of support. There was, you took care of your people, you know. And I think now we are kind of, and also what we're breaking out of are these, you know, these systems that want you to kind of keep going in this rat race thing. And if you have something that needs more care, then you're like, oh, I'll just put them in here and not deal with it. You know, we do that. Like, I grant it, like, some of us are not, you know, most people are not equipped or trained to take care of each other, you know, especially if people have needs. And, you know, whether it's mental health or, you know, even like the sick and the elderly. And whereas, you know, in tribal communities, you know, people would take care of each other, you know, whether it was through, you know, basic needs, housing, kind of revering them instead of being frightened of them. You know, I don't know. I also think that a lot of I have a half brother who's schizophrenic, and honestly, we had the same experience growing up, and we both OD'd around the same age. The problem is all his lights came on and they never got regulated. And, you know, I don't know what made mine kind of regulate in a way. You know, maybe it was my magical practice. Maybe it was because I had something to turn to that, whereas he, the system never gave him tools.
No.
You know, so I think, and the fact that I had to, I sought out tools for myself was what helped me, I think. You know, and I think that would be part of the care is like, what are people good at? Don't just drug them up and kind of send them on their way. And then, you know, I think maintenance is good, you know, and I do think meds are good for some people, but I also think that it's not, meds don't fix it.
No.
You know, they help alleviate certain things, but you have to actually get to the root of what the person needs.
Would you mind talking a little bit about how your neurotypical, your diagnosis came about? And when you say that you're a highly empathic person, is that the thing? So I've read a little bit about highly sensitive people. Is that a similar? Right.
Well, there's two things. I mean, one, I would say I'm neurodivergent, and a lot of it came through. First was suggestions by a friend who has an autistic child, and asked me if I'd ever thought about it. And I said, yeah, but I don't act like what they say a autistic person acts like, because the studies were mostly, you know, done on boys. And yes, a lot of the results were from the like 50s, 1950s. And there was a lot of, most women only recently have been getting diagnosed. So I started researching on my own and watching videos, like, you know, things with like Temple Grandin, and like watching these interviews with women on YouTube who were later diagnoses. And I just was crying because of relating, you know? And like even one woman who wasn't diagnosed until her like late 30s. And I thought, okay, well, you know, at the time, I mean, I'm 43 now. So this was last year, I started really actively pursuing, after talking to another woman who has a child who's autistic, a girl too. And you know, here, like the health insurance that I have, they happen to have a autism department. So I, you know, I had to be my own advocate. I was pushing for like psychiatrist appointments and testing because I wanted to know. But even that, it was a real challenge. Mm-hmm. I had to go through three therapists there because the first one just wanted to diagnose me as having compounded PTSD and anxiety. And I've been diagnosed with anxiety before and put on Xanax. And I know that that's not that's not the whole truth. I think I have those things, but I think they're as a result of being misdiagnosed, you know? So I had to really push and advocate for myself. Because they'd be like, well, you're a woman and, you know, you don't do the things, you don't like math. And I'm like, that's not, you know, there are new every year and every month, like they've been coming out with new kind of lists of things. Like, so, and I'm grateful for social media too, because I've been like finding also women that, don't fit those initial markers, and they're actually like fighting for recognition, you know, and changes within those systems. So that's where my journey kind of really, you know, like it was only last year, last July, that I got diagnosed. And then, you know, in terms of being like a highly sensitive person, empathic, I think there's a slight difference, and it's so slight that they can be confused. When I say I am empathic, yes, I'm highly sensitive, but I'm also like, empathic to me is my ability to be in the same room. And if I don't know you, even if I don't know you, if I suddenly, and you're not displaying any emotion, right? You're just there, you know, say we're like in the same coffee shop or something. And I felt fine going in, but then suddenly I felt a wave, and it can work either way. Suddenly I felt a wave of excitement out of nowhere, but I was maybe starting to almost like through almost like an osmosis process, feel what you're feeling. And if I wasn't sure or wasn't paying attention to how I was feeling, I could confuse that as my own emotion. It's same thing with deep heartbreak and sorrow. You know, I have literally felt heart pain from another individual who is going through a breakup. And I could feel it in my own chest as though it was happening to me. So it's like this deep empathic ability to tune into what someone else is feeling or projecting, but then begin to process it as if it was happening to you directly. So that deep empathy can be very, that I think definitely is what caused me to abuse drugs and alcohol for so long, because of wanting to disassociate and escape and numb. I also think that it affected me quite profoundly growing up, knowing that, because my mother is not, she's not the picture of mental health. She's, you know, a borderline narcissist, drug addict, you know? So like, there are a lot of things I think that my empathic abilities would just suck up like a sponge, and why I was so depressed as a kid, you know? On top of that, being denied who you are as a sensitive person, because I didn't grow up with my biological father's family's traditions. I grew up in a very American, I'd say Italian Americanized environment. Because that's my mother's family.
You know? And when did you realize that you were experiencing the world in a way that other people don't? Because I imagine you just thought that was normal for a really long time.
Oh, I totally did. I mean, even I remember being in my 20s, going to New Orleans at an art show there. Because that was the thing. I was like, I'm just an artist. you know, like, I didn't think anything of it. And I remember, you know, people would say things to me, but I remember in New Orleans, I had two experiences. One, you know, some drunk guy was just like, you're a medium, you have to stop denying it. And it was a stranger. And people would say things like that to me, and I didn't know what they meant, you know, because nobody was explaining it. And then, but in that same visit, that same trip, I actually had what I would call my first experience being like possessed by something and being and being conscious of it, because I didn't understand that in mediumship, that like, again, there was no tools. Nobody talked to me about this stuff. So a lot of stuff happened because I would drink and I would like black out. And people would be like, oh my God, you said this and you did this and blah, blah, blah. And honestly, I think it was just, that was like, that spirits will jump into your body. And in New Orleans, that was the first time I experienced what felt like I blacked out, but this time I stayed conscious while this other energy was in my body and speaking through me. But I didn't black out. And I was like, oh, this is what it's like. It's like someone just got in the driver's seat and I'm in the passenger, but in my own body. And that was the first time I understood it, you know, it firsthand, what was going on, you know? Because I would really kind of block out a lot. I would block out a lot of things. And then, you know, again, it's like this work just kept haunting me. No matter how much I tried to ignore it. And then in 2009, you know, it became my only work and I couldn't work for people anymore. It was too painful. It was too hard. And the people just kept coming for readings. And I was like, I guess this is what I'm doing, you know? So it just developed.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
And how did that change, or what was the impact of you getting sober?
The impact,
I imagine, that after numbing yourself to those experiences for, you know, a big chunk of a lifetime,
right,
to suddenly confront, I suppose, that side of yourself with no anesthetic, what was that like?
Well, I mean, there was a couple of things. My bottom, you know, before getting sober, kind of was like a 2-year bottom. Essentially, my adopted dad was killed. And then in 2014. Within 3 months, my partner and I broke up. And that was a person that I had talked about. Like, I was going to be a stepmom and potentially have a child with this person, and had never ever crossed my mind with any of these things in my life. Anyway, all that happened in a 3-month period, and it was pretty devastating, but I fell deeper into drinking and using, and therefore, you know, disassociating until it got to a point where I had, you know, a spiritual bottom. I didn't care about the physical bottom, you know. It was when I felt disconnected from my faith, you know, which is, I've always had a connection to, for lack of a better word, God or creator. And to have that feel like not there, I would rather be dead, you know, like, because I've been through hell and always had a connection to a higher existence, you know, in this way where I had felt faith and protected and loved and cared for by something outside of myself that I could not see. And then when that disappeared, I actually had a couple of friends did kind of a little bit of it. They did an intervention. And it wasn't even like a drug and alcohol intervention. It was like a spiritual intervention. And they brought me to ceremony. And I know I did. They brought me to like a sweat. We did a sweat lodge together. We did pipe ceremonies. We, you know, there's a lot of praying to bring my spirit back. You know, I was so fragmented and just kind of like a shell. And that kickstarted it, honestly. It got me off of everything, including the, like, because at that point I was just taking Klonopins just to take them. It got me off of everything. But then to really continue on, you know, in 2016, so that was in 2016. And then to really continue on, like, at the time it was like around the election and I had been sober, but I had been barely like hanging on by a thread because I had no program. And I started to, you know, sometimes when you are, I think when you're like an addict alcoholic, you know, you know, the world revolves around you, you know, and my own self-centeredness, I kind of put this election as like my, well, if he gets in, I'm killing myself, you know? And I had been doing all this like fundraising for Standing Rock, which was like another, you know, like there was just a lot of anger and frustration and feeling just disenfranchised. And basically, you know, he won and I had resigned to die, you know, and for some reason, you know, and I don't know, there's always some higher plan, right? Like a friend who I had worked with in music, actually, like, because I had done music before too, he contacted me out of the blue and was like, are you okay? I was like, no. I actually was like on my way out, like literally. Like, you know.
Wow.
And he's, yeah, and he's like, well, do you want to go to like a 12-step meeting? And I was like, no. But okay, I got, you know, I was like, you know what, at this point, like, I've tried everything. And you know, so it really took like this kind of like different, I don't know, my life, I just said yes to something else, you know, to, and how it's impacted me is interesting because, you know, I went through this, like, you know, through this recovery program and like tried to something different because I've been trying to do it all on my own for so long. And it's helped me like just connect to my work in a different way. The longer I'm sober, the more I find out and get answers to things that I used to try to like drink and use about. And in terms of my work with my clients, I feel like the dial, because I've been sober now, I just crossed 4 years and of being sober. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, September 4th, 4 years, which is like mind-blowing to me. And the fact that I'm 43, I'm like, this is insane. Like, I'm alive and I'm sober. This is crazy. But also the intensity of my work has gotten so dialed up. And like my own sensitivities are off the charts, you know, like, which is not always like a good thing, I think. You know, I'm like, I don't, you know, it's hard to live like this full time and not have community support. I mean, we have the internet and that's lovely, but like, where do we take care of our people that take care of us emotionally and psychically, you know? Because a lot of people seek, I think, spiritual advice in like tarot readings because they want, I want an answer now. I want immediate relief. You're going to make me feel better. And that's not the job of the oracle. Like, when did it become like Amazon Prime psychics? You know, like, I just, the lack of respect for the oracle is mind blowing.
Yeah, to like run to psychic.
Yeah. I'm like, you want that? Call a 1-800 number. Not me. You know, that's why I up my prices and I reduce my hours, because I'm not interested in people who don't want to actually do the work anymore. You know, it's not my job, you know, to be an emotional dumpster. You know, I'm happy to hold space for people who are working through stuff, and I'm happy to be your, like, your cheerleader and, like, root you on. But I'm a guide, and I'm not, and it took me even till this year to go, oh, I'm not responsible for my clients, like, what they do next. I'm not responsible for that, but I did not know that for a while. So it fucked me up. That's why I drank so much, because I felt responsible. You know, it took me until, it's wild, you know, when you realize that and you're like, oh, actually, they're just my clients. They're not like my children, like, you know?
Yeah. Can I ask, do you live alone?
I do.
Me too. Mm-hmm. How have you found, how have you managed feelings of isolation over the last 6 months as we've been in and out of lockdown, and as the landscape of the world has changed so much?
I will say it has been not a great time totally for my mental health. I've had amazing breakthroughs, amazing, incredible, insightful healing breakthroughs, but I've definitely bordered like deep, dark depression. And I think I mentioned this to you like one time during a chat. Like I just, you know, my head's gone to a dark place, and it's more of like, what's the point? You know, I've had some really dark thoughts and not wanted to be here, but, you know, also like somehow I've pulled through them. I don't really know how. I think definitely focusing on that kids deck has been really a saving grace. Because it gave me something to think about other than myself.
Yes.
You know, and also, like having my bearded dragon, having Lord, honestly, I got her in January. I cannot imagine like having gone through this quarantine time without her.
I'm the same with Caroline. She sort of, so she, her owner, or her previous owner had to just go to Australia just before lockdown happened. And he said, take the cat, and I said no, and then he sent me loads of really cute pictures of her, and I still said no, and then he said, well, if you don't take her, she's going to this other couple who I really don't like. So I thought, right, I can't put that on her, so I took her, and then we ended up being in quarantine, you know, and now it's been 6 months, and just having another living soul in your space is so healing, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I just like, don't even know. I'm like, wow, how have I lived without you for my life? You know, like that energy.
And just to comment on what you just said, that feeling of what's the point?
Yeah.
I think that is the cruelest trick your brain can play on you. Totally. Because it's so hard to find, there isn't always a tangible answer. I was struck by a wave of it last week. I was cooking, so I've started eating vegan, and I love cooking. And so last week I was cooking myself this really beautiful dinner, and I was roasting vegetables, and I was using a blender, and I was pureeing things, and I was doing this, that, and the other, and I was doing all this prep for one meal. And I was just struck by this, what's the point? Like, why are you doing this for yourself? And yeah. What's the point? What that means is you're not worth this.
Mm.
You're not worth the effort that it takes to stay here.
And totally.
You're not worth the space that you're taking up right now.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, I don't know about you, but like one of the main things that, like, so many core wounds came right bubbling up, you know, particularly around, because when we went into quarantine here, it was like quarantine and my birthday. And I was like, what the fuck? like it was just like, it was this like, and like, I've had, again, course correction with some friends during this time. And it really triggered a lot of abandonment and like rejection issues, like core wounds around that stuff, like where we couldn't get away from it, you know, like just waking up and it's just floating above. Like when you're kind of like just put into this abrupt slowdown, abrupt halt, and everyone is tripping, right? Because they don't know what's going on. Yeah, and like that, like you said, it's like one of the cruelest things, you know, that you can do, because there is no like answer, right?
Yeah, there isn't an external point, rather. It's not like that specific example. It's not like, oh, I'm cooking for my friends. It's like, oh, I'm cooking for me because I want this and I want this sustenance.
Totally.
It just feels foolish. It just feels silly, and it just feels like you're being laughed at by your own brain.
Totally. Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Marcel, I've got one more question for you, and then what is the worst and best thing a therapist has ever said to you? And I'm saying therapist, but in this specific example with talking to you, I will extend that to another spiritual practitioner, maybe, or someone who you sought guidance from.
The best and worst thing. It's also the funniest thing, probably, because it's true. Was like, it's all of these things. I did have a therapist once tell me that I was so, what did she say? Oh, I have to frame it right. It's so good. I was so codependent that she's like, you're so codependent that you avoid people or napalm them with your words. And I was like, what? Like, I never understood. I always prided myself as being independent. And she was like, no, you're codependent, but you avoid people, which was the most confusing but accurate thing that I had ever heard.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Where do you go from there?
I know. I'm like, well, what do you do about that? Yeah. Like, it's interesting because I tried to go to a couple of these like 12-step codependent meetings, but they didn't feel like me. I didn't relate, you know? But I can see now what she meant. But also, again, this was pre
autistic diagnosis, you know?
Mm.
And also, I don't know, I've heard some very interesting things. I've heard people, you know, some kind of, whether it's spiritual advice where people have told me that the work I do is valued and important, which is always nice to hear, you know?
Yes.
And that is helpful. But, you know, I've also heard, you know, that, you know, and I think this is taken the wrong way a lot, but I think a lot of times when you are you're a person who's here to help people, people can also project a lot on you.
Mm.
Yes. You know, their own unhealed wounds. So you become the villain, you know, and so I don't know. I think that the whole, like, you're so codependent, you avoid people and you napalm people with your words. That one hurt.
Yes. That's a very violent image that she's projecting on you.
I know. I kept drawing like a cartoon girl, like opened her mouth with like all these daggers coming out. And I was like, am I really that bad? Like, you know, So that was a little rough. Actually, I'm looking forward to, I'm meeting with a new therapist next week.
Really?
Or this week coming up. And yeah, I'm excited because I want a therapist. I want to write a book, but I told myself, you know, if I'm going to write this book, I need a therapist.
Mm. And how did you choose them?
Well, I asked around specifically with this one, I asked because my network, like I said, I have insurance that has, you know, they have therapists, but they're not great. They're very invalidating. And this person who I'm going to talk with next week came to me via another person that is a POC, person of color,
mm-hmm.
who is also open, very open spiritually, and does similar work to what I do.
Mm.
And she really spoke highly of this person. So I think that's the other thing, is like really finding someone who understands my particular path without invalidating it. Cause I've gone to mainstream therapists and they're like, you do what for a living? Like, they can't wrap their minds around. I'm like, I found my taxes as a spiritual counselor. You know,
yes.
Like, I'm not just like whipping out and who cares if I was, but like, you know, I'm not just setting up on the sidewalk. I'm like, I have a business.
Yeah.
But for some reason, Western like psychotherapy, like they can't wrap their heads around it. So I really want someone who understands it. I also want someone who understands that, I am a white passing person of color and that has its own things with it, you know. I'm mixed, I'm multiracial, but because I'm white passing, people kind of brush over some of the more like systemic challenges that I've had or experienced, trauma. So I really want to find someone, you know, that was part of also this person has experience with people who've been oppressed, you know. So
I hope you get what you need from that. I hope that's a healing thing for you.
Thanks. I hope so too. I really want to write a book about my life, but I also want to write it with humor, you know, because trauma does make you funny, but but I also need to be able to make it through the writing process.
You can follow Marcella on Instagram at Marcella Kroll. Do check out her services on her website at marcellakroll.com. In March, she's re-releasing her first book, Priestess, and she will be shipping that internationally, which is really good news for me. If you enjoyed this episode, please do leave a review and subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Audio engineering was by Albert Davis. Thank you to Jack Duff for the music. You can find me on Twitter at MyShitTherapist. And until next time, take care and take your meds. Bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.